Canada, The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740.
Note to programmer, note to self, I need a four-hour show. I cannot get this kind of information. It's like trying to shove a watermelon through an orange juice strainer. You know what I'm saying? It's just too much information, and we just have to it's like orange concentrate. That's how dense the information of this program is. We have assembled a stellar panel, and I'll tell you why. 2 days ago, technically I guess about 3 days ago now, we passed the 43rd anniversary of the Apollo 11 lunar landing. Of course, we're all familiar with Neil Armstrong's immortal words as he descended down onto the lunar surface, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, and of course, Buzz Aldrin. There with him, and Michael Collins, astronaut Michael Collins, orbiting above as the other two gentlemen walked on the lunar surface for about 15 hours. But hold on now, hold on, Nelly. There are a lot of people, somewhere around 15% of the public in the United States, 28%, latest survey, 28% of people in Russia do not believe that we have set foot on the moon, not in July of 1969, and not in the five subsequent journeys to the moon. It was a hoax, they claim, and we're going to find out why. Joining me in studio, he's no stranger to the program. He is, of course, our resident media scientist. He's a playwright. He's worked as a university lecturer, film, radio, and television producer, researcher, director. He initially trained under Marshall McLuhan at the University of Toronto, former president of the Marshall McLuhan Center on Global Communications, and then director of the Center for Media Sciences. And he's also heavily involved in JFK assassination research, knew Mr. Penn Jones Jr., as well as working with Mae Brussel and Sherman Skolnick, the great American judge buster. And it's always a pleasure to have Nelson Thal on The Conspiracy Show. Hello, Nelson.
Hello, Richard. Exciting times. It's great to be back. I've been listening to you, and the shows have just been fantastic.
Thank you, Nelson. And seated to my right is another playwright and researcher, writer, James Joyce Scholar. She's produced the popular internet radio show Shock Talk with Bloom and Steele since 2008 and is currently on hiatus working as a media scientist in the global theater. Ms. Jane Steele, welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
It's absolutely great to be back, Richard.
Great to have you. And on the line, joining us on the line is a professor emeritus of economics at Texas A&M University, College Station, Texas. He's a former chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor in 2001 and 2002. He also served as the director of the Criminal Justice Center and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, headquartered in Dallas, Texas, Morgan Reynolds. Morgan, welcome to The Conspiracy Show.
Good evening, Richard. It's great to be with you.
My word. I mean, people are sitting back listening to all of these titles and lofty positions that you have all held and thinking, well, why are these three here to talk about the lunar landing? Let me ask you first, Morgan. I mean, you're coming at this from a kind of an interesting background, a professor emeritus of economics, at the chief economist at the Labor Department, director of the Criminal Justice Center. How did you get interested in this theory that the lunar landing was a complete fraud?
It wasn't till 9/11, my interest in 9/11 led me to review so many things, and the moon hoax is clearly one of the major inside jobs in our history. You know, man's allegedly greatest technological achievement is a fraud, and I hope we can review some of the specific evidence. So I am an economist, a PhD economist. I spent my career at that, but also have always had an interest in policy. So I came at this when I left the Bush-Cheney administration, and yes, I was a political appointee in 2001 and 2002, and I left in January of 2003, And I, like many other savvy people, knew the whole Iraq invasion was a put-up job. And I asked myself, now that I was free of government duties and professorial duties, what else would they lie about it? Because this is such a huge lie that there's WMD and Saddam Hussein is our new Hitler. And I said, 9/11. Because I can remember. And then, of course, once you open your mind, once you take the red pill, as Morpheus gave us a choice in the Matrix, between the red pill and the blue pill, you no longer want to stay in the world of delusion and start looking, grubbing around it for hard facts. And thank heavens we have the Internet as our great resource to search any topic.
Nelson Thal, let me throw this question to you, because you know full well that for those people who believe that the lunar landing in 1969 and all the subsequent, you know, the five subsequent lunar landings were staged and was a complete hoax, that has become sort of the whipping boy. That has become the straw man argument for those people who don't believe in any conspiracy. I've always said that if, you know, believing that everything is a conspiracy is as ridiculous as believing that nothing is a conspiracy. But the lunar landing hoax theory in particular has become sort of the straw man argument to argue against all conspiracies. Oh, you believe in the lunar landing hoax? Well, you must be a complete nutter. Why is it, as a media scientist, you think people have... I mean, let's face it. The majority of people believe we landed on the moon six times.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why is it so hard for people to believe that this was a hoax?
Well, I guess we should start off and say we're standing on the shoulders of giants like John F. Kennedy and Marshall McLuhan's secret society speeches, and Jim Garrison and Mae Brussel and Penn Jones, Sherman Skolnick. And we know that if you can... Goebbels talked about the big lie. It's not difficult making the big lie stick. And if they can get them to believe in the single bullet theory, then we can get them to believe in anything as long as we pump it through the major news media and prevent dialogue on the media. There's no dialogue, and therefore there's no thinking or a comprehensive awareness produced. And so there's just debate. And as Jacques Ellul said in his book Propaganda, where dialogue ends, propaganda begins.
Ms. Steele, I'm going to be playing, I guess, the skeptic here. And I'm very open-minded about this. I mean, I have another theory, which is an entirely different show. I believe we landed on the moon in 1969, but my theory is I believe that we were there much earlier than that. However, let's put that aside for a moment. Talk to me about – let's start – you launch us in this discussion. The first piece of evidence that you think is important to analyze and that you believe supports the fact that the lunar landing was a hoax or staged. What would you offer up to someone who would look at you and say, I don't believe it?
I think there could be three or four different things that I could offer up.
Let's start with one, and then
Okay. When you look at the video clip itself in the movie that they did on the moon, there are no stars. Now, where are the stars? Also, if they were going to go to the moon, there is so much radiation in the Van Allen belt that it would literally kill them. They would be killed by the radiation itself.
Let's start with the Van Allen belt, the Van Allen radiation. First of all, let me get Morgan in here. Explain what the Van Allen belt radiation is all about.
Well, it's a trap for radiation. There's an inner belt and an outer belt, which traps all this lethal radiation out there. And, not all of it, but the radiation is common throughout our Earth, et cetera. But we are in a kind of a cocoon, which is via the magnetic field that surrounds Earth and the atmosphere itself. And it's interesting with the radiation, the Van Allen belt. Van Allen insisted it went out 64,000 miles total, whereas NASA says it's 20,000 or 24,000, and space travelers would have gone through there in a few hours so as to minimize this lethality. But in a way, there's too much attention to the Van Allen belt. That's only one of the radiation problems, because then you've got what used to be called sun flares and now called solar particle events. That's a huge problem. And then you've got galactic cosmic radiation coming into our solar system from all over the place. So space, despite these portrayals as a manageable problem, we don't have the technology today in fact, you know, even in suborbit now with the International Space Station, there is a big problem. And this is at a height of between 205 and 255 miles high. But people are up there for 70 days doing tours that are 2 or 3 months. And they are absorbing excessive amounts of radiation, you know, beyond government standards. So Jane mentioned this, and of course that's the number one technological problem that has not been anywhere near solved. You've got to have some kind of a shield, be it lead, you know, it's 32 feet of water, 32 feet of earth on the moon if you were going to protect yourself. There's no atmosphere, no magnetic field to stop radiation.
So it's not the Van Allen radiation that we should be concerned about. It's just galactic ambient radiation.
No, all three types.
Okay.
And as Jane points out, a lot of this can be lethal. But even if you absorb 50 rem, you know, or 100, you're going to, there's such immediate effects. The risk of televising this is absurd, because you'd be nauseous, you'd vomit in your helmet, you'd choke to death, you'd have diarrhea. These immediate effects of a good dose of radiation, and the idea that aluminum, a few centimeters of aluminum in the spacecraft is going to protect you. In fact, it actually diffuses this radiation.
Now, someone has pointed out that the radiation argument actually might be evidence the astronauts went to the moon, because the majority of the Apollo astronauts that have been involved in all of the Apollo missions to leave Earth's orbit, they've all developed early-stage cataracts, which they say was caused by radiation exposure to cosmic rays.
I haven't heard that. None of them have developed cancer. There's only one astronaut who's died, and that was Jim Irwin, and he was coincidentally going to interview with Bill Kasing, the number one whistleblower on the moon hoax.
Okay, we'll get to the lunar death list in a moment. Morgan Reynolds, Nelson Thal, Jane Steele joining us here on The Conspiracy Show, discussing the lunar landing anniversary. Was it staged? You tell me. Back with more of The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Loose lips sink ships, and sometimes corporations. Got something to say? Call Richard Serrett now at 416-360-0740 or toll free in Ontario, 1-866-740-4740.
Welcome back. What a panel we have assembled here on The Conspiracy Show. We spare no cost bringing the very best people to you. We have Morgan Reynolds on the line, and he's a heavyweight, folks. This is a professor emeritus of economics at Texas A&M University and a former chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor, also director of the Criminal Justice Center and senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, headquartered in Dallas, Texas. He is here to affirm that the lunar landing, which occurred July 20th, 1969, was a complete hoax. And also joining us in studio, media scientist Nelson Thal and a playwright researcher, Ms. Jane Steele, also producer of the popular internet radio show Shock Talk with Bloom and Steele. All right. Now, Jane, you mentioned the lack of stars visible, and we've seen all these photographs of the lunar landing. You're saying that there were no, when you look in the background up into that black sky, I mean, we saw there were images of the Earth, we saw, but no stars, correct?
Well, if I was on the moon, and if we were all on the moon, we should have the most amazing panoramic view of the galaxies and the celestial bodies, all of it, the stars. Now, if you look at the videos and the stills that they took on the moon, there's a total absence of stars. It's just a black sky. Where are the stars? What's NASA's excuse for where the stars are?
Well, now, here I am playing skeptic again, but I would imagine that they might argue that the lunar landings happen during the lunar daytime, so the stars would be outshone by the sun. Does that make sense, Nelson?
From what I understand, there should be stars, and the reason why they didn't show the stars is because then it would be very difficult to be able to – it would be easy for an astronomer on the ground to be able to see that that it doesn't line up. But there's other things –
I'm sorry. Let me just clarify that. Okay. Let me clarify what you're saying, because that's an important point. You're saying that if they were trying to recreate the constellations and so forth, if they weren't exactly precise in doing that – an astronomer watching it say, wait a minute, that star shouldn't be there. It should be over here and so forth. And so they decided just to not include any stars.
Yeah.
But let me ask –
there's a lot of other photographic evidence that we – just to go through.
And we will. We'll get to that. But I want to follow up on this.
Sure.
Morgan, what if the argument that the debunkers are making is that the reason we don't see stars in from the lunar surface in all these photographs is because – they landed there during the lunar daytime, so the stars were outshone by the sun.
That's false. All you do is turn your back to the sun, and you should see, because there's no atmosphere on the moon, the stars are brilliant, and you see a lot more of them. So, you know, the only reason the sky is blue is because we have an atmosphere. So that's a completely phony argument. And then the Neil Armstrong and the other astronauts insisted they didn't see any stars. Now, we know that you see brilliant stars from photos from the space shuttle and the International Space Station, et cetera, when you're not even, 300 miles out. They are a brilliant display.
But if you, on your camera, though, if you're not using the, the manual setting, I mean, you can turn a well-lit background into an ink black.
You just turn your back to the sun, and the camera's going to see nothing but stars. The whole Venus is going to be the brightest beside the sun. You know, this is just completely ridiculous.
Wait a minute, Venus. Didn't we have pictures of Venus? Didn't Alan Shepard take some pictures of Venus from the moon during the Apollo 14?
Not that I know of.
No? Okay.
Not that I know. Just a couple of things, Richard. You know, you talk about the cameras. Hasselblads have film in it. How did they cool these cameras down so that the film wouldn't melt? There's no blast evidence underneath the lens.
Even at Chernobyl, you know, because of the radiation, it fogs camera film. It fogs film.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I never thought of that. Yeah, I mean, I send my film, well, not anymore, but when we had actual emulsion through the security.
Right about the temperatures on the moon, too.
The temperatures are tremendous, and not only the temperatures, but Dr. Reynolds knows that when you're in the shadows, the temperature drops tremendously cold, mm-hmm. and then you get in the sun, and it's very, very hot, back and forth. How did the celluloid film and the cameras work? The blast, there's no blast evidence. They show the lunar
explosion. We'll get to that. Let's just stay with the photographic evidence for a minute, because there's a lot of stuff to cover. Let me go back to Ms. Jane Steele. Okay, so we've addressed the radiation. We've talked about the fact that there were no stars in the background. What other evidence would you offer up that the lunar landing was a complete fraud?
Well, in the stills and in the videos, you will notice that there are different sources of light on the astronauts. They seem to be in shadow. They seem to be in light, and they're all over the place. Well, in fact, if they were standing where they were, everything would be lit up in the same way it would be here. I mean,
you only have one light source, right?
You'd only have one light source, so why are there so many different shadows?
So you're saying the angle and the color of the shadows are inconsistent.
Exactly.
Which would suggest that artificial lights were used.
Yes.
And the foreground and the background are all in focus, which suggests front screen projection.
But wouldn't they be complicated by reflected light? I mean, the lunar surface is almost phosphorescent, isn't it? Morgan, let me get Morgan in here. The angle and the color of the
shadows. I haven't heard that claim. This does remind me of the alleged reflectors to bounce laser beams off the moon. But apparently you can do that without any reflectors. You know, that's one of the claim of the government apologists make, that the McDonnell Observatory is pinging lasers, laser beams off the moon all the time. But as far as a reflective surface, I mean, I went out and looked at the moon tonight.
It's highly reflective. It's highly reflective.
Well, that's the point. The argument that if you're saying that there's only one source of light, which is the sun, and therefore you should have consistent angle of shadows, they're saying, well, wait a minute. No, the moon's surface is very reflective. Plus you have an uneven ground. You've got the reflection of the lunar dust. You've got the Earth reflecting
light. My question really is, why isn't, because of the lack of an atmosphere, why isn't there brilliant sunshine illumination everywhere instead of this rather dingy which is another mark of artificial lighting, but there isn't enough light on these sets to me.
Yeah, on these sets, interesting.
Yeah, on these sets.
One of the biggest evidence, photographically, the evidence.
Right.
Under all the pictures of the lunar lander, there's no evidence of any blast. As this thing was supposedly coming down in real life, the Roger rocket firing would scorch the moon's surface and would create craters and blast, evidence of blast. There's no evidence of blast under any of the pictures. Not only that, the ascent stage of the lunar module, when it blasted off, there's no fire coming out.
No visible flame. Right.
And the speed at which they showed it going was just ridiculous.
Morgan,
it looked like a Flash Gordon.
Yeah, it did.
No blast craters. Okay. No, it's true. You don't even see any sign of dust scattering.
Nothing.
And there's no dust on this gold mylar or the landing pads.
Now NASA would say what? I guess they throttled very far down during the landing, right? Because it's not quickly decelerating.
Oh, so gentle. And never been done, by the way, this reverse thruster landing. And you're in a vacuum, which makes it even more difficult than on Earth. Of course, Neil Armstrong almost lost his life in the LM simulator.
Yeah.
He had to eject.
Yeah.
It's so hard to control this thing.
Go ahead, Nelson.
Astrobiology magazine yesterday came out with an article in which they quote David Seibeck, who's in charge of the Radiation Belt Storm Probes, RBSP. Here's the quote, Dr. Reynolds, you should pick up on this because this supports everything you're saying. He says, quote, particles from the radiation belts can penetrate into spacecraft and disrupt electronics, short circuits, or upset memory on computers, unquote.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Let's grab a phone call here, if we could. And who do we have here? Is it John in Toronto? Is that who we're... David Gaskin's busy answering the phones in the other room. Who do we have on the line? Is it John? Let's just take a call. Okay, let's say hi to John in Toronto. John, go ahead. You're on The Conspiracy Show.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Well, thank you. You're a photographer, I understand. You want to shed some light, no pun intended.
Well, yeah, I actually do have some experience with photography, extensive. And I was just listening to what you guys were talking about with regards to night photography, so on and so forth, and being able to capture...
Yeah, no stars in the background. No stars in the background. Yeah.
See, the thing with that is that even the luminescence of the stars without the atmosphere that we're currently in would be so low that if they are, in fact, shooting in lunar daytime and just getting enough exposure to get the astronauts, those stars would be completely gone. You wouldn't be able to see it in the exposure of the shot.
All right. Well, then how do we get stars of the night sky here? I mean, wouldn't they adjust their shutter speed or something if they really wanted? I mean, I would think
absolutely. They could and they would, but I'd imagine that with regards to them being being on a mission as well as possibly not even being the most adept photographers going up there and being astronauts already.
But how would the film survive the temperatures of the moon? These are 1969 Hasselblad film with celluloid film, cameras at 150 degrees Fahrenheit and higher. How would that survive?
Well, I mean, I guess the other question then would be, how do our astronauts survive on the Mir space station?
Well, they don't. They don't go outside. They're
in the cocoon, right?
Well, I mean, they don't go outside extensively, but they do go outside.
Well, they're not going outside with such flimsy cameras mounted on their chest.
Well, the Van Allen belt doesn't start for 1,000 miles above their Earth's surface, so.
All right. I appreciate John, the photographer, checking in, adding to the conversation. Let's go back to Ms. Jane Steele. Okay, so we've talked about. I mean, we're skimming the surface here, but keep in mind, yeah, we have an hour. So we've talked about the radiation. We've talked about, and these are the more popular, you know, pieces of evidence that have been pointed out. We've talked about the no stars in the background or the foreground. What other and we've talked about the absence of a crater blast when the LEM module came down and when it took off. What else? What else would you point to and say that doesn't look right? That doesn't meet the sniff test.
Well, I think the actual movement of the astronauts, the way they're moving, the motion that they have in the videos, it isn't right. It isn't the way they would actually move if they were on the moon in that type of gravity. I think it's 1/6 of our gravity.
Right.
So I think that comes to actually how were these videos or these stills actually created, because it isn't right. That's just not how they would move at all.
So, in other words, if they're only weighing 1/6 their actual weight, they shouldn't be moving around
in slow motion.
In slow motion,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, how should they be moving, Morgan?
Hey, this whole thing about gravity is an interesting thing, because retired pilot John Lear turned me on to this book by one Pari Spolter, and it's called The Gravitational Force of the Sun. And she, I'm not saying I know or understand, but one of the implications of her revolutionary look at gravity is that the moon's gravity would be about 2/3 of the Earth. And I notice in the book, my other two panelists are probably familiar with this book by Bennett and Percy called Dark Moon. And on, let's see, what page that is, 142, the authors write, even more so since NASA and the Soviet Union had both experienced disturbing gravitational anomalies during lunar orbits involving their respective unmanned craft. I would like to know a lot more about that.
All right.
because if the moon really is only 1/6 of ours, that would be one engineering problem to master in terms of orbiting and possibly even landing.
We got the music coming up here. We'll break away back with more of our panel on the lunar landing hoax when the Conspiracy Show returns. My name is Richard Serrett.
Different views make great conversation. This is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett on Zoomer Radio, AM 740. To speak to Richard live, call 416-360-0740 or toll free in Ontario, 1-866-740-4740.
All right, I've laid my cards on the table. On this one, I'm skeptical. I'm willing to entertain just about any alternative viewpoint on the program and discuss it rigorously. This one, although, I have to say, there's some pretty compelling evidence on both sides. One of the things that's always intrigued me, though, about the lunar landing or lunar landings was, here we got 6 of them all happening during the first presidential administration of Richard Nixon. All 6 happened in that first 4 years, and yet no other leader of any other state ever claimed to have landed astronauts on the moon, even though you would assume the mechanical means to do so would have become progressively easier after almost 40 years of steady technological development. Nobody else ever landed a man on the moon. Which is interesting. But my question to you, Morgan, all of you really, is I would think that at the height of the Cold War, had Nixon's administration faked the moon landing, the Soviets would have been happy to argue for a hoax as some sort of a propaganda victory. Don't you?
There's various answers to that. One is just lay back and let those guys collapse, because everybody knows you have a stake in this. But more likely is, remember, they're both using Nazi rocket scientists to a large extent. The Russians arguably had more reliable and heavier rocket launchers. I think they had better engineers. We were way, way behind. And they're probably, given this alternating months, I do this, you do that, I think there was more likely cooperation between the teams. So it's one of these, there's a lot of best of enemies going on here, right? I need you, for my Pentagon, I need to have a threat. You know, we even make it up in the Muslim world, which is really fantastic. But the Soviet Union at least kind of looks like the villain and is a much better candidate. So we don't really know. There's a lot of things that are going on here. I like it to go back to the narrower evidence rather than this big picture thing, you know.
I understand. No, that's a good point. It's just, that's something that's always sort of stuck in my craw about this. I mean, here's, I guess, the million-dollar question, and again, keeping in mind our time constraints. How was it done? I mean, was this in fact told to us in Capricorn 1, that movie in 1978? Is that how they did it? In the desert on a soundstage somewhere? Or how was this thing pulled off, Morgan?
Let me make before we go there, how they did it, because it's easier to prove that they faked it, okay, than exactly how they did it. A couple more comments about Jack White, the photo analyst, points out in his time and motion study how impossible all these NASA photos are. All these well-composed beauties, these guys had all these other duties. It couldn't have happened. And the lunar lander really bothers me, the lunar module, which is, anybody with any common sense, look at this thing and start laughing. You know, it's just a flimsy joke. And when you think about it, never landed before, you know, and the throttle, it's a question whether it really had a throttle or not, but let's suppose it did. And you know the film where they come in and Neil Armstrong, everything's smooth, there's no noise. There's no heat problem, even though this thing is very close to them. Burning at 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. There's no shake, rattle, and roll, you know.
Right,
they got this noise, vibration, harshness thing just mastered. There's no hovering like a helicopter would. And, you know, NASA stands for never a straight answer. There is no party line. Remember, they were going to commission a book by James Oberg. I think the reason they backed out of it, because it would be incoherent. There's no way they can come out. So they rely on these bloggers and who knows, a handful may be getting payments or whatever. But everywhere you look, it's clear that this thing is a complete fake. And remember, there's no independent observers or press. There's no Jamie McIntyre stumbling into this thing and on CNN and saying, by my close-up inspection, there's no sign of any large engine parts or airplane or whatever, right? They have it completely within their control. But it's such a complicated problem, they can't really fake it, especially now. It's great that four decades later, there's renewed interest in this. Now, how did they do it? Yeah, like Capricorn 1. If you look at these sets...
Okay, let me just jump in here, Morgan, because I've got the music coming up. I got to break away. We'll discuss when we come back. Nelson Thal, Gene Steele, Morgan Reynolds, the lunar landing hoax on The Conspiracy Show. Stay with us.
Curiosity? Or did the devil make you do it? Whatever the reason, welcome back to The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett from Zoomer Radio, AM 740. To talk to Richard, call 416-360-0740 or toll free in Ontario at 1-866-360-0740. 740-4740.
And we have our lunar landing hoax panel assembled here. Ms. Jane Steele, producer, playwright, and media scientist Nelson Thal. And on the line from the United States, we have Dr. Morgan Reynolds. And let me throw this one out to Nelson and also to Jane. Pick this up. We wanted to get into a discussion of how this was pulled off. If this was, in fact, a hoax, if it was staged, where did they do it? Who did it? Who was responsible?
Yeah, I have to go along with the theory that's been put forward by Jay Widener, and that is that I think that Stanley Kubrick was very much involved. I think it was using front screen projection. I think they used MK Ultra mind control on these guys. I think that they used Diego Garcia in the middle of the Indian Ocean. I think these guys using implants and drugs, MK Ultra, actually were put in a simulator and believed that they were on the moon. This is not difficult to do, understanding the sophisticated MK Ultra project. And I think that ultimately was done so that they could siphon off the real big money for putting together a particle beam weapons space command system. We must remember Walter Dornberger, who was sentenced to hang at Nuremberg, is the one who chose von Braun. Von Braun and Dornberger worked together for Hitler, and von Dornberger, of course, was very much connected to the JFK assassination. Michael Payne worked for Dornberger. The British sent a letter to the Americans saying, execute him, just as he was asked.
Okay.
So there's –
you mentioned Kubrick.
You've got guys there.
You mentioned Kubrick.
Yeah.
I think that a plausible argument could be made that Kubrick was brought in to film it on a soundstage because there was so much on the line here. They couldn't – you know, had they ever never attempted to beam a television image from the moon back to Earth that way, I'm guessing that just as a safeguard, Nixon or NASA administration didn't want to risk that image not getting to the American public. This was their showcase, their triumphant victory over the Soviets in the space race. So they had Kubrick film that actually in a soundstage. That's what Americans saw. But the actual landing may have taken place.
Well, actually, Stanley Kubrick was first approached in the early 60s after he made the movie Dr. Strangelove, because he had some phenomenal, special effects in recreating some of the military planes. And they wouldn't let him take any pictures of those planes for his movie. So he did these amazing special effects. So he was approached to do the moon landing videos at that time, but also to do the 2001 Space Odyssey.
Right.
He did that at the same time. So that started in the early 60s, 63, 64, 65, until it was produced in 1968. And that was when we first saw it. And, of course, in that movie, you can see the slow motion scenes to get us accustomed to what the videos would look like in the slow motion moves.
So he created 2001 Space Odyssey in order to prepare us for the lunar landing hoax.
Yes,
and to test the techniques on the audience so that a year later when he did the real moon hoax, that he would be able to see how well they did. It was a test case. It was a testing the audience, see if it would work, the front screen projection. And if you look at the Space Odyssey and view it and side by side the pictures from the moon, it's uncanny. It's the same process.
Now, let me ask Morgan.
I don't agree with that. We don't really have the evidence to pin this on Kubrick. One thing that bothers me is that he was such a perfectionist. He wouldn't let this mediocre stuff out the door, I don't think.
You think it was – but do you think it was definitely done in a sound stage studio, do you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the giveaways – there's so many giveaways, but one is in the foreground there's there's quite a bit of detail, you know, little rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
And in the background it is all smooth.
Yeah.
And you can almost see the line between the sandy set and the backdrop.
Right.
But if you look at them
– and those hills don't match the aerial photography of the moon surface. You know, it's much craggier than the background.
There are also claims that
I don't think it's Kubrick. It's somebody not near as good.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you this: this is whenever there's a claim of some sort, you know, that somebody conspired to pull something off. People say, "Well, how can you keep something like that secret?" We know, you know, we had with NASA, you had 400,000 people working over 10 years on the Apollo project. How are you gonna keep 400,000 people?
That's easy. You know, NASA, let's recognize, is a civilian front for a military operation. If you're really competing with the Soviets, life and death and nuclear war and so on, that's very easy to establish. And then all the major contractors are the usual suspects, okay?
Yeah.
Boeing and Grumman and all these people, they're all mostly ex-military and, you know, it's a revolving door. And everybody is used to secrecy.
Yeah.
When they say, how can they? And further, of course, there's the compartmentalization. It's a need to know. You know, only a couple of hundred people at the top really get the whole picture. And there were engineers are quoted as saying, you know, I always had the feeling that this was fake. There wasn't enough concern with quality and really solving engineering problems, okay? In other words, the simulation was agreed early. You know, there's no way we can do this by the end of the engineering problems are insurmountable. Do you know how they supposedly defecated on the Apollo moon missions? They had a plastic bag with tape. They'd tape it to their butt, and then they'd inject a bactericide in there, and then they'd take the, in weightless, everything.
That's a bit of a farmer's fix-it, as we used to call it, yeah.
Huh?
All right, Nelson, you wanted to jump in here.
Dr. Reynolds, do you think they ever did send unmanned a craft to land on the moon?
Yes, I do, yes. In other words, that's within our technical capability. So, however, we do need this reservation always because they're controlling what images we see and the like. You know, it's like this since 2009, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, and they keep promising, we're going to show you pictures of the residual of the manned, and it's just a joke, you know?
But can an amateur astronomer with a decent telescope see the some of the artifacts that were left behind on the moon? Haven't they reported?
Not from Earth, no.
No, and
you
not only
the Hubble telescope was in low Earth orbit, and that could, I think, do it. But and certainly these probes orbiting the moon could. But they aren't giving it to us because I don't think it's there.
And if they did we know that they falsify these forensics since the JFK assassination. They've got Oswald's palm print on the gun that they took in the morgue. I mean, you can't believe anything anymore.
That's a good point.
Unless you establish it independently, you've got to tread most carefully.
So what's going to happen in a few years? I mean, China says they're close. They're close to landing someone on the moon. So are they going to have to fake it too, or what's going to happen?
The radiation problem is insurmountable by current technology. You'd have to have some kind of, quote, remember when you were kids, invisible shield.
Right, right.
And what are the Americans... Because
you can't get the lead out, you know, you can't get the lead up in the air and orbiting. It's just you need a 6 feet of lead and the Soviets always insisted we won't make any attempt to go to the moon unless we can guarantee virtually the safety of our cosmonauts. Whereas we were very casual about it. You know, it's not a problem. Well, it's not a problem because you're not really going.
Ms. Steele, why did they fake the lunar landing? What was the motive? Any ideas? I mean, this thing cost them, $30 billion? Why would they?
Back then, it's $135 today, today's dollars.
I think possibly, you know, I think if you look back to who was in charge of NASA, and we're going to say Wernher von Braun, and he was part of the Operation Paperclip when they took the Nazi scientists and they took them out of Germany and brought them to America, to the U.S. of A. And I think they've infiltrated. We've got the Nazi Fourth Reich here now. And, of course, they would have taken that money. And I think, as Nelson said, they used it for other weaponry, for other things. You know, they took all that money. And, of course, they certainly didn't use it, did they? Not, they didn't get to the moon.
No, no. So $30 billion of free money, they funneled that into some other program?
Well, building particle satellite, I mean, building the system they have now, which is they're able to use particle beams from satellites, and they're able to use the Hubble spacecraft as a mirror and shoot a powerful laser from the ground, particle beam from the ground, reflect it off the laser back down to Earth and do damage. It's a weapon. They built a space weapons with it is
all right. I want to work in one quick call. Can I do it, David? Yes or no? Yes. Let's say hello to John in Amsterdam, New York. Hello, John. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you, Richard. I'm amazed with your program. I doubt that they went because they came down and we saw these photos taken that we're all skeptical about. But we've never seen, at least I haven't seen any photographic evidence of that lunar landing as it leaves the orbit and hooks up to return to the Earth. I don't think they had the technology
I agree with that.
Come back.
First of all, yeah, you've got to, and their computers, it's just a joke, you know. You got to catch an orbiter, the command module that's going 4,000 miles an hour, okay? You need to have, there's no way a human being piloting this can pull this
okay.
off.
Okay. All right. John in Amsterdam, New York, thank you for the call. Morgan Reynolds, leave us with a website.
Yes, nomoregames.net.
Nomoregames.net. Morgan, a great pleasure. I hope you'll come back.
Thank you.
Thanks.